This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
So the Buddha the subsequent practices and traditions of Buddhism have only really one aim, one goal, one intention, and that is to alleviate suffering, to transform the individual's relationship to life, to reality, so that we don't suffer so much about life, about being in this world, and so that we don't cause suffering to others out of our suffering, out of our ignorance, to end suffering for ourselves and others, to be part of a solution, part of a positive movement, at least, in the right direction. And if we pay a little bit of attention, it becomes clear that we tend to suffer a lot in a couple of main areas. Not conclusively, but a lot of the time, if we look at what's stressing us out, what's causing some suffering, some dissatisfaction, some unease in our life, that often it's some level of greed or hatred. Almost always, it's some kind of greed or hatred that is the problem, that is the culprit of our unhappiness. Have you seen that? Now, maybe we don't actually see it as greed or hatred. We just see it as, I would be happy if this situation was different. If they would act differently. If the world was different. So all of that sort of, I would be happy if the situation was different, is a form of craving, is a form of I want it to be different than it is. I'm suffering about it not being the way I want it to be. So that is category of greed. My suffering is a lack of acceptance. It is a greed for this situation, for reality to not be the way that reality is. Or the flip side, which is, I would be happy if they would be different and I fucking hate them. Or I hate this, or I hate myself, or the pain and pushing it away and trying to meet it with resistance and aversion and the kind of all of the levels of hatred. Hatred our practice around aversion and hatred is learning to meet pain with tolerance and acceptance and compassion, and it's hard and it's against our survival instinct to become compassionate towards pain. The very core of us hates pain. Our animal instinct is hatred. None of us are born into a body that naturally meets pain with compassion. I haven't met anybody yet that stubs their toe and says, "Oh, you poor toe. May you be free from suffering." Everyone naturally says, "Motherfucker, I hate you, and I will chop you off if I have to get rid of this pain. Whatever I gotta do." Mostly tonight, I actually want to talk about the other, about greed and the antidote to greed. We talk a lot about compassion. We practice in the meditation with meeting the pain with compassion. It's a huge part of our practice. But tonight, I'd like to focus a bit on the importance of generosity as an antidote to the suffering around greed and clinging and craving and attachment. Generosity is, you know, just as a blanket statement, generosity is an incredibly necessary aspect of the path, the spiritual path, the path to, from this Buddhist perspective, if you want to be happy, generosity has to be. It's impossible to be happy without being generous. It is a requisite. It is a prerequisite. It is a necessity. But it is on a list of necessities for happiness. It's not, somebody could be incredibly generous, but not have enough renunciation, or not have enough wisdom, or not have enough kind of insight, mindfulness, and still not be happy, you know what I'm saying? So it's in a continuum. Generosity as an antidote to greed, totally necessary, but it's not enough in and of itself. It needs to be balanced with, you know, if we look at the Eightfold Path, the core suggestions from the Buddha of how to end suffering, which can be broken down into three categories: sila and samadhi and panya. Sila means ethical behavior, renunciation, morality, how we act, how we speak, how we earn money, kind of karma producing actions, being ethical, sila. Samadhi, meditation, the necessity of meditation. You could be an incredibly generous person but have no real wisdom because you don't practice meditation, and you may not be happy just from giving, not enough in itself without having some insights into the impermanent that samadhi gives us, shows us impermanence directly. We see it. You sit down, you meditate, you turn your attention inward, and the samadhi, the meditation, shows you everything is changing. And it's not a philosophy, and it's not a theory, and it's not an intellectual understanding. It's an insight. And with that insight comes, and if I cling to anything at all, I suffer. And with that insight comes, it's all impermanent and not so satisfactory, and much of it is impersonal. It's not self. We look inward and we see there's not a real, there's nothing to cling to as I or me or mine in this mind, body, heart process. There's just nothing worth hanging your hat on as self. So samadhi shows us that, and only meditation can show us that. It's not a, you can't read about it, you can't learn it, you can't, you know, doesn't matter how many times people tell us, it has to be from the inside, through meditation, seeing reality clearly. Panya is wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. Ethical behavior, meditation, wisdom, understanding what's happening, having the right intentions and thoughts and aims and goals, and having a wise view of life. So the generosity stuff, the dana, often I think in our Buddhist circles, sometimes we give it a little, dana, this word D-A-N-A, we give it a little short shrift of saying, like, dana means dropping a few bucks in the bowl, right? Dana is the word that translates as generosity. And we kind of maybe don't really give it its full importance as a path factor, as a path necessity. It's not just about donating money. It's about our life's energy, about donating money might be part of it, but it's so much bigger than cash. So much bigger. And it's thought that one of the reasons why Donna actually doesn't make it, generosity in this way, doesn't actually make it onto the Eightfold Path. It's not actually found in the explicitly in the Eightfold Path because it was a prerequisite. That it was already, it's sort of assumed that you've already been taught the importance of generosity before you're taught the Eightfold Path. And it's said that historically, we don't really know, but it is, the tradition tells us that when the Buddha met people who were coming to him who weren't disciples yet, who were just sort of checking him out, he wouldn't jump right into, like, let me teach you about mindfulness. He would first talk to them about generosity and make sure that their understanding about the importance of unselfishness and non-clinging and the antidote to greed, make sure that they had a firm understanding about generosity before he would get into, and let me teach you about emptiness. Before he would get into, let me teach you the Four Truths, the Eightfold Path, that the preliminary conversation was, let's talk about giving. Of time, of energy, of resources. Let's talk about ending that universal suffering of attachment, of greed, of clinging. Is that a cockroach? Is it a huge one? There was a huge one in here. The other day there was a huge one in here. I was here on Sunday and there was like this cockroach like this big. And it was just cruising and people were cool. And then there was this lady over here and I was like, are you okay? And she's like, I don't know. Finally, somebody picked it up and took it outside. And she said, it might be somebody I know. Could be, right? All of my exes came back as cockroaches. So generosity as a prerequisite. And so kind of redoing this list, if you're familiar with these Pali words of sila and samadhi and panya, or ethics and meditation and wisdom, putting generosity out first, out front. Dana, sila, samadhi, panya. Generosity, ethical behavior, meditation, wisdom. As necessities, if we want to end suffering in our life and in this world, generosity out front, as a practice, as a way of life, as an antidote to greed. Greed for things to be different than they are. Greed for the ability to keep what we have, to get more. Generosity is an antidote to all of the delusion that we carry about happiness coming from material things, thinking that if I get enough stuff, if I obtain enough pleasure, if I have enough money to purchase enough pleasure, then I'll be happy. Such a strong, pervasive form of confusion for us human beings. And it can really lead to a lot of greed and a lot of selfishness, because if you really believe I'll be happy when I have enough money or things, then you're going to tend to hoard your money and things. And the truth is that the money and the things will never make you happy. Ever, 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 ever. In the, well, for long, anyway. They'll never make you happy for long. They'll make you happy temporarily, perhaps. You know, you get what you want. It's great to get what you want, and it lasts for a moment or two. You're happy, feel elated. But it doesn't really work for the kind of ease, the kind of well-being that we really want. Never works for that, for real happiness. Because of the survival instinct that craves for pleasure, just these bodies have to crave for pleasure in order to survive. And that manifests its way, one level or another, as greed. Not your fault that you are greedy. And you are greedy. And anybody that is in denial of being greedy, that's the first step. That's the first process towards generosity, is acknowledging the greed that is built in to your biology. It's not your fault. It's just part of taking birth. There is greed for pleasure as part of this human experience. For some of us, it manifests as a lot of greed for material things, for some more than others. But everyone has some level of greed, some level of clinging, some level of craving. And so the first piece is just acknowledging it. That's where mindfulness also comes in, and to look and say, okay, where am I acting out of greed? Where am I selfish? Where am I self-centered? Where am I clinging? Where am I deluded into thinking that it's all about me? Or thinking that I'm the most important or more important. Or the Buddha said, once we begin to understand how important generosity is, once we begin to really, really get it, important for our own freedom and important for our community and our connection with others, that once we start to get it, that we won't let a single day go by, a single meal go by, without sharing some of our time, our energy, our resources, and our food with others. That it'll just become a daily practice, every day. Not generosity won't become sort of end of year, charity giving. Oh yeah, I'm generous. I give to the charities at the end of the year. But a daily practice, part of each day, a generous way of being, a generous attitude. Each meal, saying, okay, can I share some of this food that I have, this plentiful, my resources, can I share some of it with others who are hungry? We start to get in line with generosity and see, like, okay, maybe it's not my most natural tendency, and it's going to take some effort to become a generous person, but we get it. Kind of philosophically, we say, okay, I know that that's important. I need to antidote to greed, to my suffering around clinging. I'm ready to give. I'm ready to commit to a path of generosity. Then I begin to practice generosity. Then comes, okay, how? The question, how do I give? What's this actually entail? And one of the ways that the Buddha talked about it, he said there's three factors to generosity, to giving. And the first is being really clear about what is our motivation. What's our intention or our motivation behind the gift, behind the giving? Really important, and we'll get into that. But also, who are we giving to? Who's the recipient of our generosity? And that is actually quite important who we're giving to. And what sometimes in the Buddhist circles is called the purity of the recipient. Are the people that we're being generous towards really worthy of the generosity? Do they have a purity? Now, in some ways, everyone's worthy of generosity, but there's a kind of hierarchy in the Buddhist circles of who's more worthy. And the kind of merit is based on the purity of the recipient. And then, so there's the motivation and who are we giving to? And then what are we giving? What is the gift? What's the kind of gift? What's the size of the, if it's money, what's the size of the donation? If it's energy, then, you know, the kind can be material. Are we being generous with material goods, with our food, with our money, with our stuff? Or immaterial? And I think that this is very, very important too. Maybe even more important than the material giving is the immaterial giving. The giving of our time, of our energy, of our attention, of our kindness, of our... I always think of forgiveness as an act of generosity. An immaterial gift. And often it's sort of a gift to ourselves, actually, to forgive. You're really the biggest beneficiary of forgiving is us, usually. Wow, I'm going to have to carry that resentment around anymore. What a relief. So generous to let go. Check my email.
What?
Just kidding. So the Buddha made a list of eight different motivations. And so I want to share them with you. We'll discuss them a little bit. And then I'm also curious if you feel like some of your motivations for generosity aren't on this list. I'd be happy to. Does this feel like a conclusive list to you? Or is there other ways that you feel motivated? He said, the first motivation for generosity, sometimes one gives with annoyance or as a way of offending the recipient with the idea of insulting him or her. You know that kind of generosity? Here you go, sucker. Or... I don't know. Like, what's an example of that?
My mother buying you dinner.
Yeah. And there's a sort of price tag with it. Like, I gave it to you, you fucking owe me.
Hooks attached.
Yeah. I was thinking of like some sort of like when you're bickering with someone and they want what you have and you don't really want to give it and you're like, I'll just fucking take it. No, take it. Really. You deserve it. And this sort of like, I hope you feel guilty now. You want some? Take it all. I don't need any.
You need it more than I do.
Yeah, you need it more than I do.
Okay. It's lethal.
Fine, you can win the award for having more pain than I have. Yeah, this sort of giving. There's a time where, like, where the Buddha says, you know, if somebody insults you, or somebody's insulting the Buddha, and he's saying, like, okay, this person is, he said, you know, if you had just given me a gift, but I didn't accept it, would that gift belong to me or to you? And the person who was insulting the Buddha said, well, if it was my gift but you didn't accept it, I guess it would still belong to me. He said, cool, I don't accept your insult. So it's that sort of like, oh yeah, hey, I got something for you. Fear also can motivate a person to make an offering. And I think that's really important in the Buddhist creating merit of, like, I better give to the center, to the temple, to the teacher, because if not, I might have a really bad reincarnation, like if you're really that kind of Buddhist. And, like, I don't really want to give, but I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't give.
That's
Catholic. Not so different. So some sort of fear, and so maybe it could be like a religious consequence, or it could be peer pressure of like, okay, you're here, and you don't really want to give any money tonight. You know, really, in your heart, you're like, fuck them. I don't want to give them any money. But then, you know, there's a girl standing behind you that you kind of think is cute. And you're like, she's going to think I'm a real schmuck if I don't put a couple bucks in the bowl. And so out of fear of looking bad, I'm going to give a couple bucks. Not, you know, the motivation is not sincere. It's just like, I'm afraid of what I'll look like if I don't do, or what'll happen, or. So probably lots of examples of that, giving out of fear. What else? Number three, one gives in return for a favor done to oneself in the past. So it's a repayment. So it's, you bought me dinner last week, I'll buy you dinner this week. It's, you know, because you gave to me, I will give in return. That's a very common. You find that a pretty common motivation for your generosity? They gave to me.
They call it a campaign contribution.
Is that a campaign contribution? Yeah. Yeah, so pretty common. And not a bad motivation, you know. Like, yeah, I want to return the generosity that I was shown. Or giving first with the motivation of hoping that you'll give back to me later. Right? Like my motivation from the beginning is like, hey, you know, I bought you
dinner.
I bought you dinner at Taco Bell. And I heard they just opened a new steakhouse. And I was wondering if you might, maybe next week? A lot of that in sex, yes. I made you. Your turn. My turn. So we all know that one. Giving with the expectation of receiving. with the motivation and expectation of getting a similar favor for oneself in the future. The next one, the fifth one, giving because we understand that giving is considered good. Mm-hmm. And I want to be good, so giving is considered good, so that's why I give. Again, not a bad motivation. It is good to be generous. But being clear, oh, I'm doing it because it's considered good and I'm striving for goodness. This next one is stated, I've read it a couple different ways. This translation, I think, is a literal translation from the Pali. It says, I cook. They do not cook. It is not proper for me who cooks not to give to those who do not cook. Mm-hmm. So there's like almost a guilt in it. It's not proper for me not to. Not necessarily I really want to, but it's just improper for me not to. Now, of course, this is coming from the monastic tradition that is saying the monks and nuns don't cook food, but I cook food, so it would be improper for me not to give them some food because they can't even cook for themselves. But I can, so I'll give because it would be improper or rude for me not to. Now, so this is about food, but I've also heard it translated, Tom Jeff translating it as, I am well off, I have money. They are not well off, they do not have money. It would be improper for me not to give to those who are in need. I'm just seeing that that could be, it's not that I really want to, but I know, I feel that it would be rude not to. It would be improper for me not to.
Could you also look at it instead of as guilt, as in responsibility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that that we have the responsibility to be generous to either or people who we don't have, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you couldn't hear me saying, maybe not a negative guilt, but just a responsibility, just a discernment that says it is part of my responsibility to give to those who do not have.
The origin of the tithe. Pardon?
It's a what?
The origin of the tithe.
Tithing.
Yeah.
Is
giving 10% of what you have.
It's just part of your responsibility.
And social norm.
It's the social norm.
But why do you teach norm? I mean, in part, why you teach is you have, I think you do have a deep responsibility to say, I have something here that I want to share. And so I think there's part of that of saying, hey, I've got something, I want to share
it. It would be selfish for me not to, kind of thing. Sure. The next one is saying some give. Sometimes we give. Our motivation is to give so that we get a good reputation. Mm-hmm. That our motivation is, I want to be seen. I want everyone to know that I give. Huh?
Eli Broad.
I don't know who that is. He's somebody who...
Real estate developer. Uh-huh. Big one.
But you give so that you're seen as, your reputation is, you're generous. And
lots of buildings with his name on it.
Yeah, okay. Museums and things are doing this stuff.
But not meditation centers.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. Well, I'm willing to ask him. No.
Yes. You're willing to ask him? Oh, yes, please do.
I've had a thought on that. I was reading recently the quote from Christ about if your right hand does charity or something like that, do it in such a way that your left hand doesn't know what your right hand is doing. But It also seems to me that if you are obvious, not in a negative way with your charity, that you inspire others to do the same.
Yeah, but there is something quite good about, you know, seeing the celebrities doing, you know, charity work in New Orleans or in Darfur or whatever, that there is something about, like, inspiring. It's good that it's public.
Or
because it's inspiring others also maybe to be generous.
Or better than just your friend. Because you're like, well, my buddy can do it, so maybe I can do it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. There maybe there is a shadow to the kind of give anonymously all of the time. I think there can be a shadow to that.
You know, I mean, isn't this like? I mean, how the fuck are we supposed to know how we're giving? You know, or how we're being generous? You know, I mean, it's probably, it could be a combination play of all these things. Some of us come from these really weird fucking backgrounds where, you know, you learn about generosity and go, you know, you gotta fake it until you feel something, you know? And, you know, I just, you know, sometimes when I'm generous for a combination of those reasons, or maybe I'm really being generous. I don't know, you know.
I think it just has to do with the purity of your intent.
What?
Regardless of whether you're giving.
But what if you don't know about purity of intent? What if you've never learned, you know?
I mean, I think that part of it is just this conversation and us looking at, okay, there are all of these different possibilities of intention and levels of purity and motivations. And then as we are mindful, as we begin to practice mindfulness, and we start to ask ourselves, okay, what's my intention here? What is it? I don't fucking know. Or like if it's a recovery thing, like many of us in the room are in recovery and they say, you know, be of service to others to get out of your self-centeredness. And my intention is to do that so I don't drink, so that I don't get high, so I don't end up back in that hell. And so there's a kind of selfish altruism. I'm going to help you. I'm going to be of service because I need to get out of my own way. So some of it is that, is I'm giving because of the result. And that's okay. That's an okay place to start. The last one on this, the more we're mindful, the more it'll be clearer and clearer why we're giving. And sometimes it is out of spite, and sometimes it is out of saving my own ass, and sometimes it's, I want to look good, and sometimes it's out of guilt, and sometimes it's out of duty, and sometimes it's out of fear of the consequence of not giving, right? That kind of recovery example again, like they asked me to, you know, go and speak at this jail or something. I really didn't want to, but I was, you know, they told me if I don't, I'm going to get drunk. So I'm going to be of service, right? Because out of fear. I don't really want to. I'm not feeling generous. I don't care about anybody right now. But I don't want to get drunk. I'm afraid of what will happen if I don't give, right? And then later, the same situation, and it might be, I'd love to go and speak in that jail, and I don't, you know, just for the joy of doing it, just to be of service. And so the more we're mindful, the more we'll see, of course, that our motivations change and that it's different in different situations and different as we develop and our practice develops and our... The last one is giving for the sake of just gladdening the mind. I forget, he says the term that is used, because it pleases. Giving pleases. Where was it? To adorn and beautify the mind. And it's not even so, it's not even for the pleasure. It's just because it makes your heart and your mind beautiful. Not even pleasurable, just it adorns and beautiful. Generosity is like an adornment. And mind here, citta, heart. For your heart and your mind. It makes you beautiful. Feel beautiful, look beautiful, but that's not the motivation. But you just to beautify and adorn the mind. So all of these different motivations. Then, who are we giving to? Who's the recipient? What's the... There's a very kind of Buddhist centricity around this teaching, where it's like, the best thing is to give, if you can find an enlightened being, you're going to get the most merit, the most karma, if you can find a Buddha to donate to. If you can find a Buddha, you're going to get a lot of merit if you give her or him a donation. And so it's a little Buddhist, you know, it's sort of a, for me, it reeks of religion. I don't really like it. It reeks of the sort of religiosity of give to us. Dig deep. You're going to get more merit if you give to a Buddhist than if you give to a Christian. They don't need it. It's such bullshit. I mean, of course, it's purity of the recipient, and you know, maybe there is something to, is the person that you're giving to, doesn't have anything to do with their religion, but are they ethical? Are they wise? Are they kind? Are they generous people? You know, that's this kind of thing. Yeah, please.
Well, so I have an example, perhaps, that's pertinent to things today. In the area of intellectual property. And so if you share intellectual property with somebody who's going to rip it off, that's kind of not giving to somebody who has purity,
right,
who will use it themselves constructively or with you or in a positive manner.
Right.
And so being having discernment, it's a very... It hits very home because I'm struggling with being generous to somebody that I don't trust,
mm-hmm,
because of their own personal motivations and how they use information.
Yeah.
So that was very, it resonated very strongly in that intellectual property domain.
Yeah, it's much more about the integrity.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of critiquing that often it's presented in, and if they're Buddhist, they're going to have the most integrity. And maybe if they are an enlightened Buddha, maybe it's true. Maybe it's true that somebody who's free from greed and hatred and delusion, you know, is going to have kind of perfect integrity. But I think we would also find those people in all religious backgrounds, not just our ism.
Maybe... saying that you should donate to Buddha, it's the best to donate to the Buddha, means that there is Buddha in every single person on this earth, and in some of them you may see it more or less.
Yeah, I like that. And I think a big part of the recipient piece and the Buddha piece is about... the gratitude for the transformative effects of the Dharma, of understanding where we started this conversation, how much suffering there is in this world, and who are genuinely, what people are genuinely working to end the suffering and teaching the techniques that are going to end suffering. And so that there is a sort of Buddhist centricity is saying that this is important, non-violent, compassion work that needs to be supported, whether it's the monks and the nuns or the meditation centers or whatever, and that there's great merit in supporting this kind of peace work that will bring a transformation to the individuals and to the world. So there is some peace to that.
Well, wouldn't a Buddha also be more likely to give that back? So if they receive generosity, it's not that they're going to like hoard it for themselves. So in a sense, like,
yeah. Yeah.
Also, I think as humans, beyond the Buddha part, it's kind of hard for us to receive if you go on the other side of it. I mean, a lot of times in my life, I've been really lucky. A lot of people have given me a lot of things that I didn't ask for. Some bad, some good. And sometimes it's like,
what do I do with this? You know, how do I even sit with what's been put in front of me? Yeah. I can't swallow everything that's here.
Yeah.
So.
You know, does that mean if we judge the person as being unworthy, we don't have to give to them?
There's just sort of a hierarchy on everyone is worthy, but the way that it is taught here is that those who are more worthy, who have more integrity, you will get more merit from being generous to the people who have really a lot of purity and integrity. You will also gain some merit from giving to the scoundrels who are also deserving, who have no integrity, but are also deserving of love and kindness and compassion, forgiveness, and generosity. So we're just about out of time. I want to just make this last point, and I'm sorry that there's some hands and I'm not getting to it. So motivation, who are we, who's the recipient, and what kind of integrity do they have or not have? And then the kind and size of the gift. And again, this is a Buddhist teaching. And what is considered the most, the number one gift, the most precious gift, has nothing to do with money. Has nothing to do with being generous necessarily with money. But what's considered most important is the gift of the Dharma, of actually pointing people towards the truth and the practices and the tools that will allow them to free their heart from greed, from hatred, and from delusion, that the gift of the Dharma is considered the most precious, the most valuable thing that we could ever give to anyone. And not in a weird sort of missionary way, like kind of knock, knock, knock. I've got good news for you. There was a Buddha. You can be mindful. Not that sort of like, I've got something for you. Living the Dharma, being an example of it. It's what Matthew was saying about my motivation to teach. It's why we don't charge at the door, because the Dharma that we teach here, it's our gift. It's our practice of generosity to give it away. It's an act of generosity as an offering, these teachings. And it has been for 2,500 years, and and one of the ways to think about giving the Dharma, sometimes you might not be in the place where you're ready to teach the Dharma. And I think that that's actually a quite good motivation for giving to meditation centers, to teachers, to supporting, to saying, I'm not ready to give the Dharma, but I want to make sure that it's available. I want to make sure that there are places where people can come and hear the Dharma. And that actually what I can do is give some of my financial resources as a gift of the Dharma to make sure that the doors stay open, or that this teacher is supported so that they can continue to teach in this way. I don't know how often you think about that. You know, on the financial level, when you're giving your $15 or your $10 or your monthly supporter or whatever it is that you do, to actually think about, you know, this money, this isn't just for against the stream or to support. This is to make sure that the Dharma, this is a gift of the Dharma. This is to make sure that meditation instructions are available next week. What I am doing is I'm supporting the Dharma moving forward, not just any individual, but this movement of the Dharma. I like to think about it that way. I have a whole bunch of more thoughts about generosity and its importance and the different ways that we can look at it. And we're out of time. And our last practice and act of generosity is the act of offering the merit of our practice. And if you come here regularly, you do it here regularly, but it's a very good and interesting thing to integrate into all of your meditations, even if you're just sitting at home for 10 or 15 minutes, at the end of your practice to just say, may anything good from this be shared with all beings, not I'm practicing and want to keep it all, but may it be an offering, may the merit be shared with all living beings. So, may the merit be shared with all living beings. That's simple. See you soon.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.